Welcome to Episode 9 of Solid Gold, stories of the best games in Paw Sox history. I'm Mike Antonellis. In this episode, we go back to August 2003 as Bronson Arroyo pulls off the rarest accomplishment for a pitcher, something many go a lifetime without seeing, but something many at McCoy saw for the second time in 4 years. Bronson Arroyo was born in Key West and was selected by the Pittsburgh Pirates in the third round of the 1995 MLB draft out of Hernando High School in Brooksville, Florida. After 5+ years in the minors, Bronson's dream came true. He made his debut with the Pirates on June 12, 2000 against Atlanta and would appear in 53 games with the Buccos. But Arroyo went only 9-14 with a 5.44 ERA during his tenure in Pittsburgh. Only 29 of his 53 appearances were as a starter, and the Pirates moved on. The Red Sox claimed him off waivers on February 4, 2003. The signing of Arroyo was an off-the-radar move by general manager Theo Epstein. Just 2 weeks prior, the Red Sox had signed David Ortiz. Current Giants broadcaster Dave Fleming was behind the mic for the Paw Sox in 2003.
When the Red Sox first signed him, I would say it didn't register a whole lot. He hadn't had a lot of success with the Pirates. He was a reasonably big prospect for them. There was some promise. I mean, I think there were two things going on. Number one, the Red Sox were really talented at the major league level. Number two, they didn't have a ton of big prospects yet. Now, maybe the wave of those younger players was starting to build down in the lower levels of the minors that would then, you know, make its way up to Boston like 5 years from then. But
Fleming's broadcast partner in 2003 was Andy Freed, who currently calls games for the Tampa Bay Rays. Freed recalls Bronson's move to Boston.
The Pirates had control of him, and they just didn't really want him anymore. I think the thing with Bronson, the longer in baseball, when guys really rely on that breaking pitch, it can take a long time to develop. So he wasn't a real young pitcher in 2003, but he was starting to get a real feel of the breaking ball. And his location came around that year, and more than anything, he stayed healthy.
David Borges was the Paw Sox beat writer for the Pawtucket Times.
I remember Bronson Arroyo being a guy who they had picked up from the Pirates. I remember people around the Paw Sox saying that the Sox were really happy to be able to get this kid. They thought he was going to be a good one. They didn't expect to be able to get him, but they did.
Arroyo joined his new organization at a great time thanks to shrewd moves by Epstein and his staff. Boston appeared on the brink of challenging the Yankees for supremacy in the American League and maybe even finally ending their longtime World Series curse. Bronson was anxious to join a contender and start a new chapter.
When I got picked up by the Red Sox, I didn't really know what to expect because I had only been in one organization, and I didn't really realize that philosophies could be so different from organization to organization. You're drafted by a team, and it's the only thing you know. You think all of Major League Baseball kind of operates the same. As I got into that first spring training, Theo called me in the office really early, and he said, hey, he told me, it was the first time I'd ever gotten any real honesty in the game. He just said, flat out, he called me, and it must have been the second week of spring. And he said, hey, you're not going to make this club. And he goes, I need to hide you so someone else doesn't claim you off the waiver wire. So just enjoy spring training. You're going to go to Pawtucket, but you're going to be here till the last day so that way rosters are full.
The Paw Sox won only 60 games in 2002, but in 2003, the club had a great mix of young players and veterans, including Arroyo. Pawtucket's longtime public relations director, Bill Wanless, recalls the Red Sox building a great team at AAA.
He was a great free agent signing. He had been with the Pirates organization coming up. And that year in 2003, we had an excellent team. We went out and signed some veteran free agents. We paid them pretty good money. The Red Sox were, at that point, still in search of their elusive first world championship since 1918. They stacked our team. We had an excellent team.
They had been really bad in 01 and 02. Buddy Bailey had come back to manage the team. The team was really good. They had a lot of good players, and many of them went on to the Major League.
On the field, it seemed Arroyo would help lead the Paw Sox back into contention. Off the field, Arroyo was a big music fan and very good with the media.
He's probably the guy I got to know best of any Paw Sox player I covered. People say this all the time, oh, he's a good guy, he's a great guy, but Bronson was such a good guy, so down to earth. As we came to know, and I knew at the time, a big music fan, obviously a guitar player. I seem to recall talking to him about that because I'm a big music fan myself. Time to time during that season. Got to know him pretty well, and Bronson was, I don't say this about everybody, he was as good as it gets in terms of a guy to deal with clubhouse.
And to know him is to really like him. A real laid-back guy. He'd bring his guitar on the road. Just very easygoing. From Florida. Easy guy to root for.
He was a very respected guy because he worked hard. He took things very seriously. We saw him bring his guitar on the road every once in a while. He was a guy who showed up early, did his work, didn't say much. He was ultimate no drama. Nothing like that ever sort of touched him. Just go out, pitch every fifth day, and pitch really well.
After spending 94 games at AA Portland, the 2003 Paw Sox would add another future fan favorite alongside Arroyo. But otherwise, the 03 club didn't have those household names, recalls Fleming.
Kevin Youkilis made an appearance, and Freddie Sanchez was there for a little bit. There weren't a lot of names that stand out. Bronson is certainly one of them, but not a lot of names that stand out as far as future big league success goes, big prospects go.
Andy Aban was the Crash Davis guy on that team. Really good guy. Really nice guy. Lou Collier was a nice guy. Good guy to talk to. Adrian Brown, he made one of the greatest catches I've ever seen in a game to rob a home run. That was a good team. And they brought up Kevin Youkilis for the end of the season and the postseason run to kind of give him the experience.
Youkilis is also famous for a 71-game on-base streak, which he started in 2003 and continued during his promotion to Pawtucket. Adrian Brown played with Arroyo during their time with the Pirates. As the 03 season went along, it was clear that Buddy Bailey's team was a contender and Arroyo was becoming the ace of the pitching staff. He was named an International League All-Star, and as the season reached August, the squad was really hitting their stride.
But there were three or four guys that had been successful at times, major leaguers. So we had a deep team, and it was a good mix. Bronson was a leader. There was some real solid players both on and off the field for that team.
They are our grandparents, and in many cases, our mom and dad. They're our neighbors, and today, millions of older adults sit isolated in their homes. As your neighbors, we at Cox remind you to reach out to them. One call, one text, one video chat a day can make someone's day. Social distancing doesn't mean social disconnecting. Cox encourages you to connect with a neighbor, family member, or friend. One call a day. Let them know they're not alone. This is a message from Cox, bringing us closer.
On Sunday, August 10, 2003, Bronson Arroyo is the probable starter against the Buffalo Bisons at McCoy Stadium. In the baseball world, probable is an almost certain to start that day. But that morning did not start off the right way, recalls Arroyo.
I was living in Providence. It had an underground garage. And in the underground garage, it had like a magnet code you would get out on this metal box. And it just wasn't working that day. So I'd gotten out of the car. Somehow, I smacked my elbow on the metal box hard. But when you pitch 32 to 34 times a year in a major league uniform, I mean, you're just hyper paranoid about your body. Are you sleeping on your arm at night? You know, I mean, to this day, I have a hard time sleeping on my right side because I've been sleeping on my left side for 30 years, right? Trying to avoid waking up with a right arm, you know, that you get like in panic mode over these things. And so I smacked my elbow and it started swelling. Like, I could feel it swelling. You're just so sensitive to every outing. You just want to feel perfect out there all the time because you know it's hard to win regardless. So I was just disappointed going to the stadium. I was just kind of frustrated and maybe a little panicked.
He was living in Providence, and he said he bumped his right elbow exiting the complex through a gate, some mechanism to open the gate, something along those lines. But he definitely kind of banged his elbow a little bit and said he didn't feel great. It wasn't terrible. Didn't have a good bullpen.
The game had a playoff feel since it was late in the year and each team was in postseason contention. Plus, Arroyo wanted redemption after struggling against Buffalo 2 weeks prior to this start. Andy Freed breaks it down.
He had faced almost the same Bisons lineup on July 26th and gave up 11 hits in like six innings. So if he wasn't fine and sharp, he could still get hit. And that was Buffalo had a really good lineup. They were in first place at the time. Bronson, as I recall that game, he gave up a lot of hits, but the team scored a bunch of runs for him, and they actually overtook him for first place. So by the time Buffalo came back to Pawtucket in August, they were down to third place. They were five games out. And I can remember that day, for whatever reason, it was, you know, one of those kind of lazy Sunday afternoons.
The Paw Sox drew over 550,000 fans in 2003, averaging over 8,200 per game. On August 10th, they had a paid attendance of 9,940 for a Sunday afternoon tilt against the Indians affiliate.
Well, it was a beautiful day. It was a really good crowd. The Paw Sox were a powerhouse, not just sort of the historic powerhouse, but in those years, the Paw Sox, we were drawing big crowds every night, and it was such a big deal in New England to go to Paw Sox games and go to McCoy and fish for autographs. It was a beautiful day. It was maybe a little warm. It was August, vacation time. didn't matter.
It felt like a big league stadium that day. In that era, the Paw Sox fan base was really the Red Sox fan base. Red Sox fans were at a fever pitch. The big league team was good. The Triple A team was good. A lot of the same players would go back and forth between the minors and the majors. And frankly, a lot of the fans would. Gorgeous Sunday afternoon.
Arroyo took them out of the first inning and retired Meiser is Torres, future Paw Sox infielder Brandon Phillips, and New Hampshire native Greg LaRocca. In the bottom of the first inning, the home nine delivered some instant offense. Andy Freed on the call.
Here comes Dominic Swings and sends a little roller up towards third. Brown breaks for the plate. He will score. Pratt charges, fields, unloads to first. Not in time. It's an infield single for Andy Dominic.
Pawtucket grabbed a 1-0 lead against Buffalo righty Jose Santiago, who, like Arroyo, had logged a lot of innings in the big leagues. Santiago continued his struggles in the first inning.
Santiago to the plate. Swinging a line drive up the middle. Base hit. Kokolid scores to third base. Abad being waved home. And Escobar throws into second base. It's a two-run single for Lou Collier. And 3-0 Paw Sox.
Collier started in left field. Adrian Brown in center. Both were teammates with Arroyo during their days with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Arroyo cruised through the second inning, setting down the big bat of Alex Escobar, who hit 24 homers that year for Buffalo. Escobar worked the first of only three-ball counts on the day. The 26-year-old righty put away Lyle Mouton and Chris Wakeland. In the bottom of the second, the hot bats of the Paw Sox did not disappoint.
He swings and rolls one up the middle sharply, a base hit into center field. Dransfeld scores, rounding third Brown, and he comes in to score. Holding at second, Kokolet, a two-run single for Andy Abad, and 5-0 Paw Sox.
Abad played 415 games with the Paw Sox from 1997 through 99, and in 2003, he finally made his Red Sox debut that same season. In the top of the third inning, Arroyo made quick work of Victor Valencia, Kareem Garcia, and Scott Pratt. Paw Sox beat writer Dave Borges remembers the dominant stuff early on from Arroyo.
He had a big lead early on, only like 30, 31 pitches through the first three innings, and then he had a 5-0 lead.
When you have quick innings like that, even if you just get through the first two or three, I was always very conscious of getting deep in a ball game. I wasn't a guy who cared about a lot of strikeouts, and I valued pitching a lot of innings, and I always did, even early in the minor leagues. And so I hadn't missed a start my whole career. So for me, the conservation of energy early in a ball game was very, very important to me. I wanted to try to get as many outs as I possibly could with the least amount of effort. And so I would definitely have been aware of the fact that after you went through the lineup one time, you were back to the number one guy, and it was already the fourth inning.
As Arroyo retired the top three in the Buffalo lineup in the fourth inning, one media member was certain Bronson Arroyo was going to retire all 27 batters in order. It was longtime radio broadcaster for the Buffalo Bisons, Duke McGuire. Wanless vividly recalls the scene in the press box.
We all know Duke McGuire, the interesting and great broadcaster for the Buffalo Bisons, was doing the game on radio. I'll never forget, he walked out after three innings of four, and he came out of his booth and he said, he's going to pitch a perfect game against us. I said, what, Duke? What, excuse me? He says, I'm telling you right now. He says, we have no chance. He said, are you watching this? His stuff, and we stink. He said, he's going to pitch a perfect game. I said, Duke, go back in your booth. I'll talk to you later on after the game.
Can't totally tell if he's 100% serious or not, because he said a lot of things, which is one of the reasons why we love him so much. I mean, he's just a super guy, but he's seen a lot of baseball in his day, and that was kind of the point I was making a moment ago was, man, you just hate to say it a few innings in, but it was so ridiculously easy, and nobody was hitting the ball hard at all.
The Paw Sox continued their dominance over Jose Santiago, adding two runs in the fourth inning, ignited by this run-scoring hit.
One strike pitch, a line drive base into the left field. Kokolet around third, never hesitating. He comes home, Wakeland's throw cut off, RBI for Andy Dominic. Paw Sox lead it 6-0 now on the Dominic single.
Dominic hit 304, 13 homers, 57 RBIs for the Paw Sox in 03, and was a standout player for the club in 04, earning him a short stint during Boston's history-making season. After Arroyo cruised through the fifth inning, there was a moment in the sixth. The righty had retired 16 straight batters until former teammate Adrian Brown came to the rescue. Dave Fleming remembers from his seat in the radio booth.
I guess that was probably the hardest hit ball, but it wasn't like some diving catch or robbery or something. I mean, I think it just was a ball that was hit pretty hard, which was almost unique in that game because I really can't remember other balls getting hit hard.
Adrian Brown made a nice catch in center field in the sixth inning. I don't know if he necessarily robbed a hit, but it was certainly a nice running catch.
Me and Adrian had played a bunch of years. He was a little bit older than me and already kind of a level up, and I kind of caught him in AAA, I think, in the big leagues. We played together, and we were good buds. Me, him, and Emil Brown, and a bunch of the guys that came up in that organization. It's not many times you get through six innings as a no-hitter, much less a perfect game. And so the sixth inning, I can remember things starting to kind of slow down on the bench and people starting to move about in their space in a very robotic way.
Hi, I'm Ed Medeiros, CEO of East Commerce Solutions. At East Commerce Solutions, we've been providing merchant services to businesses throughout New England since 1994. At East Commerce Solutions, we provide point-of-sale systems, credit card processing, payroll services, and gift card programs. Give us a call at 1-800-527-5395 or visit us online at eastcommercesolutions.com. East Commerce Solutions, we are your local merchant service provider. Have a great day.
The former Pittsburgh Pirate hurler had retired the first 18 batters of the game, and there was a buzz in the ballpark. Just 3 years earlier, Pawtucket's Tomo Oka had thrown the first perfect game in the International League since 1952. Now, Paw Sox fans started wondering if lightning could strike twice. Wamless remembers the crowd.
I think as that game unfolded, it was like, could this really happen again? Could we have another perfect game? And the fans were more into this one. It was a beautiful Sunday, there was a big crowd, and I think they sensed it this time that, hey, I want to be there, I want to be part of history, I'm going to see this. And the anticipation grew significantly.
While it felt like a lazy Sunday early on, by the middle innings, when he'd get the third out in every inning, you're seeing standing ovations as he goes back to the dugout. And now I wonder, would they send it back out there? But back, you know, I didn't even question it at the time, but it just, in terms of the rapidity of the game, it just went so fast.
As the drama grew, there are even nerves for the broadcasters. Andy Freed and Dave Fleming were getting ready for a big moment in the booth.
When you're in the minor leagues, especially for what we do, you want to be in the major leagues. My chest was pounding with excitement, as everyone's was in the ballpark. Everybody felt big league that day. This is the one that was just, there was no question. It would have been shocking if you didn't get it.
Like doing any game, I just figure people are tuning in, tuning out, and if you don't alert them to the fact that something really cool is happening, they might turn the game off and then be mad at you the next day because you didn't tell them, and they turn the game off and they missed it.
Arroyo had no problems in the seventh or eighth innings. Now it was on to the ninth, trying to become the second Paw Sox pitcher in 4 years to complete the historic gem. The final three outs of a perfect game are the toughest for a pitcher. Everyone in the ballpark knows what's going on. Arroyo remembers how he felt entering that final inning.
You feel like you're kind of riding on borrowed money there. It's like you don't feel like it's yours to really have or to lose. At least I didn't think so. Until you get to the ninth, the mindset changes, right? And so I can remember sitting there, the seventh went by, the eighth went by, and at the end of the eighth inning, it started to feel like instead of, hey, if I give up a hit, awesome, I'm in the seventh inning and I'm probably going to win this thing anyway and I've had a great day, it's now going to feel like I'm letting down, not myself, but the people who are watching the game. And it's one of the few times in a baseball uniform that I could say, you know, baseball-wise, is one of the few times that I felt indebted to the fans to get those last three outs and give them something special. And so I remember I went into the locker room because I would have had a certain routine, but I can remember going in and getting a half a cup of coffee for a little bit of energy or whatever it was, and just feeling the stands rumble and the crowd as we were hitting, just anticipating that I was gonna get these last three outs. It was one of the few times that during a game I was really nervous. Normally that only happens pre-game until the first couple of pitches of the game. At that time, that was probably as nervous I've ever been in a professional uniform.
He said he had never been nervous on the mound in his career to that point. Now again, pitched a little bit with the Pirates, but hadn't faced the Yankees in Yankee Stadium like he did in 2004. But he said he had never been nervous till the ninth inning of that game where he just was three outs away from a perfect game.
Pinch hitter Mark Little started the ninth and fanned on three pitches.
Here's the line and the 0-2 pitch. Got him swinging. One away. Three straight breaking balls by Bronson Arroyo, and Little is down just like that. 25 in a row for Bronson Arroyo, and one out of the ninth inning.
Then Luis Garcia had a turn.
One ball, two strikes. Garcia, 210 hitter. Here's Arroyo's pitch on the way. Breaking ball, strike three, called on the outside corner. He is one out away. 9 strikeouts for Bronson Arroyo.
It all came down to the number 9 hitter, Scott Pratt.
From the windup, the 1-2 pitch. Swinging a ground ball, hit on the right side. Abad's got it. Flips to Arroyo. A perfect game! Bronson Arroyo has thrown a perfect game here at McCoy Stadium. And here come the Paw Sox streaming out of the third base dugout. As a pile of Paw Sox on the first base side, right behind the first base bag. The bullpen comes in as well. McCoy Stadium history. Pencil in Bronson Arroyo, the 26-year-old from Brooksville, Florida. One of the greatest games ever pitched in Paw Sox history happens today, August the 10th, 2003.
So you're trying to gear up and not overdo the call and just make it feel as big league as possible. And that was easy to do because the crowd was so into it. And one of the reasons I love McCoy Stadium so much is because the acoustics in it are so good. And the fans were in it every pitch. And I remember that all throughout the game, too. It was, like that. Everyone was reacting to every pitch. So it was very easy to get into. And I know I left that day feeling this must be what it feels like to be in the major leagues. And it felt like that day, I think, for everybody. Bronson probably more than anybody else.
The last three outs felt like a playoff game. You want it so bad that you're out there on pure adrenaline. And you're not in your body the same way you are normally in a game at that time because you're not feeling the wear and tear. You're not tired. You're running on a high that you can't really manufacture most of the time. And so the last three outs, I can remember feeling like I was throwing the ball as hard as I had any time during the day. I was snapping every breaking ball off as if it was Game 7 of the World Series. As the inning was kind of unfolding, it felt very effortless because everything I was throwing up there, I felt like I was giving it my all and I was getting the same result.
A day Bronson Arroyo and the entire Pawtucket Red Sox organization will never forget. Despite hurting his elbow when he left his apartment that morning and not feeling great during his bullpen session, Borges recalls it didn't matter.
Didn't feel great going into the game and then goes out and throws a perfect game. It goes to show that we always see sometimes a bad bullpen session turns into history and sometimes a great one turns into nothing. So it was pretty remarkable with that. And I'm sitting there saying, wow, I've seen two perfect games in the span of four seasons. And it was pretty amazing. In fact, Boca's the third perfect game in International League history, and Arroyo's was the fourth. For that, 100-plus years of the International League, there have only been two. So it was pretty amazing.
Now we had the fourth perfect game, now in 120 years of the International League. So you had two within three-year stretch, and only four in the history of the league, and two of them came at McCoy.
Well, usually in those kind of games, you're having to dig back in the record books and when's the last time anybody did this, and in our case we didn't have to do, we all knew the Paw Sox just had so much of a grip on the history of the International League and the history of baseball there that to me it was like Arroyo's the fourth perfect game in the history of the International League, which had been around for a century and had a ton of just a laundry list of great players, and the Paw Sox had two of those four, and that to me fit right in. Like, they were the constant, they were the team that in a lot of ways carried the flag for that league and for that level of baseball.
The most impressive stat line, 101 pitches, 73 strikes. Arroyo threw a first pitch strike to 22 of 27 batters and only went to a three ball count three times. Andy Freed on the sensational outing.
And 27 hitters went by so quickly, but the aggressiveness of Bronson that day, I do remember. I wrote it down. It was 101 pitches, 73 for strikes. And I don't think it was a hard day for the umpire, a guy named Bob Bainter. And I think Bronson and Hasselman made it very easy for him.
The stats obviously speak for itself for Arroyo. 101 pitches, 73 for strike, 9 strikeouts. But the amazing thing, only 4 balls left the infield the entire game. One of them was the Adrian Brown catch, but only 4 balls left the infield for the entire game. So,
but to throw a perfect game is absolutely a total team effort. I mean, everybody has got to play the position perfectly. As the game is going on, the outs are mounting, and that pressure is also being laden upon all the outfielders and infielders. I do remember not many balls leaving the infield. It was a lot of soft pop-ups and kind of weak ground balls. 101 pitches. I remember there being a lot of strikes. My old manager that I had for many, many years with the Pirates was on the other side, which was Marty Brown. He was my manager in AA. He was my manager in AAA. with the Pirates. I was always a strike thrower and a guy who, when things were going well, got soft contact. When I had good stuff, when I had a little bit more zip on my fastball, when I could reach back and get like 90, 91 if I really needed it, which wasn't there all the time, when it was, my strikeout rate would go up. And that day was just, it was kind of a perfect storm. I talked to Coco Crisp about it. Those guys had been traveling all night. They had like an extra late game and they didn't get batting practice and they were all tired. So it was kind of a perfect storm. I mean, that obviously, you're not going to throw a perfect game just because guys are tired. It's so hard to do. But all these things kind of combined, I guess, just wind up being a magical day. And, you know, I'm thankful for that.
On that historic day, a popular Red Sox outfielder who played with a team in the 40s just happened to be a special guest at McCoy.
The other part of the day that was super gratifying was that Ben Mondor, and he just happened to have that box down there with Dominic DiMaggio in it that day. After the game, I didn't have any idea they were going to dig up the rubber off the mound. You don't think about these things. They dug up home plate and dug up the rubber and just presented that to me, which was a shock. And Dominic brings out some champagne and said it was the first perfect game he had ever seen live and in person, which is crazy to think of the lineage that goes through him, obviously, in the history of the game. And for him to see that with his own eyes was legendary.
Bronson was kind of a laid-back character. I do remember him tipping his hat. He didn't do a lot of jumping around, but his teammates did, and the fans were great. They had a champagne celebration in the clubhouse.
The grounds crew came out and they dug up the pitcher's rubber and gave it to Bronson. The celebration was really good. It was good for the Paw Sox too, because the team was good. I think it was easy for them to sell to everyone watching the news that night. Look at the excitement. Come see us at McCoy Stadium. People had their rally towels going, and it was great. It was as good a minor league season as I ever experienced.
It was also something you didn't think when you set out to play baseball. You just don't think you're going to throw a perfect game. It's not on your mind. It just kind of crept up on me, and celebrating it was just nice to have a team. It's also nice that it was later in the year, and then most of the guys on the team knew me on a personal level since it was my first year in the organization. So they got to really enjoy that with me, knowing me as like the guy I was in the locker room and a good teammate and all those things.
So where does a perfect game rank in the eyes of Bronson Arroyo and Dave Fleming?
I'd say, especially because it was in AAA and because the league had been around for so long and there was less perfect games there than in the big leagues, it's really special. I'd say the only starts in my major league career, honestly, that probably rank above that in the way that I felt as the game ended would have been beating Bumgarner in 2012 in the playoffs in game two in San Fran. I had a no-hitter into that game into the sixth.
There's an example of somebody just at a different level. This was that like that to me. This was, even though Bronson was the same age as the guys he was facing and was basically the same pedigree, it was like, this is a guy who's doing his deal at a different level from everybody else on the field.
The 2003 Paw Sox finished 83-61 and beat the Ottawa Lynx 3-2 in the first round, but were swept in 3 by the Durham Bulls in the Governor's Cup Finals. Arroyo went 12-6, a 3.43 ERA, and 24 starts with Pawtucket, and only 2 weeks after his perfect game, he was called up to Boston. Bronson earned a save in his Red Sox debut on August 25th against Seattle at Fenway Park and was there to stay. He would not pitch as a regular minor leaguer again in his career. In 2004, Arroyo established career highs in wins, games, starts, innings pitched, and strikeouts. The legacy of the right-hander grew larger in Game 6 of the ALCS against the Yankees. Dave Fleming recalls the rise in popularity from that moment.
That A-Rod thing definitely had a lot to do with it.
Off the end of the bat, Arroyo. The ball gets loose. It's down the right field line. Jeter coming all the way around. It's a one-run game. And now we're going to have an argument as Francona comes out of the dugout.
He swatted the ball out of Arroyo's hand.
And being a part of that particular Red Sox team had a lot to do with it. But his personality changed. Everything about him changed. He was a quiet, sort of understated guy who was just going about his business, trying to churn his way back up to the big leagues and not bother anybody on the way. And then this perfect game happened, and to me, that changed something in him. But I think his confidence changed, and that allowed that personality. He's a different guy, but he's an interesting guy.
He's probably the guy I got to know best of any Paw Sox player I covered. The following year, I actually went on the Red Sox beat to cover the Red Sox for a chain of papers in Rhode Island, southeastern Mass, and Connecticut. And Bronson, of course, was on that Red Sox team, a key member of that team. And he really helped me out as being sort of my kind of go-to guy when I needed stuff. and I got some great stories out of him.
Arroyo and the Red Sox rallied from a 3-0 deficit to beat the Yankees and went on to sweep the Cardinals in four games to capture their first World Series in 86 years. The right-hander earned a hold in the history-making Game 4. In 2005, Bronson won 14 games in his final season in a Red Sox uniform. He was traded to the Cincinnati Reds for Willymo Pena on March 20, 2006, and pitched nine of his final 10 seasons with the Reds. During a 16-year career, Arroyo won 148 games over 419 appearances. He will always be remembered by Paw Sox fans for his perfect game. Red Sox fans will never forget the fun-loving guy who loved music.
His call-up and his success in September, and then making the team the next year, and ultimately ending up on the playoff roster for the team that broke the curse, and this unbelievable moment with one of the game's biggest stars, I believe traces back to that day at McCoy. This is a guy who went on to sign a big contract and make a playoff start where he pitched great for the Reds and win a Gold Glove and have a long, successful, distinguished Major League career. And I really, truly don't know if that would have happened without that day in Pawtucket. And I think it changed the way he thought and everybody else thought about him. And that does not happen very often with one minor league game.
For Solid Gold, stories of the best games in Paw Sox history, presented by Cox Communications and Sports Radio WEEI 103.7 FM. I'm Mike Antonellis.